Hello, my friends. Welcome to another episode of the Real Advice Podcast. Super excited for this week's guest. He needs no introduction. So I just honestly just want to hop right in because I know this is going to be filled with a lot of making fun of each other and just all that. So the man, the myth, the legend, Britt Bear.
I actually took that t-shirt off this morning. I had that on, the man, the myth, the legend, and I took it off. I was like, no, I don't want to be that guy.
I introduced you as Britt Bear because I actually don't know your real name. All joking aside, I had to change your name on my phone because since we DM normally instead of texting, when I go to type in your name, I immediately think Britt Bear instead of Matt. And I think I might have put it under your middle name, but that's now how I can look you up in my phone. So what's going on, Matt? How are you today?
A lot of people have the same problem. In fact, Tom Ferry has me in his phone as Britt Bear. And that's okay. That's okay. No, things are going great. Things are going great. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited. I don't know what's coming down the pipeline. I don't know what questions you're going to ask me, but I'm open. Let's go.
Well, you know, I've got a lot of really weird things to ask, so hope you're ready.
Go for it.
For those that don't know you, I'm just kidding. I actually don't have anything actually that weird to say. For those that don't know you, you know, who are you? Where are you from? How'd you get into real estate?
Okay. So my real name, Katie Day, so you know, is Matt Barret. Last name's French on an Englishman living in America.
Oh my goodness.
Don't judge.
I'm already so confused.
I know. Try being me. Matt Barret. I'm here in Tucson, Arizona. I've been here since 2011. I was originally in the British military for 10 years and in 2011 retired and moved over here. And I've been in real estate for 5 years this year. So I'm still a young pup in the grand scheme of things, but I don't see myself going anywhere anytime soon. I love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah. So what did you do before real estate?
So before I did real estate, I actually worked in IT. I was an operations manager for an IT company. And I was locked in an office, sat behind four or five monitors a day, just managing people and pushing people here. You need to go fix this client. And I never saw the light of day. And it was a great job. Don't get me wrong. I loved it. It allowed me to utilize all my skills, you know, logistical thinking and strategic thinking and people management. But it just didn't fill my cup, you know.
Yeah.
And my father-in-law, who I was on a team with for four and a half, nearly 5 years, he was looking to start a team and expand. And I just took the opportunity. I was like, shit, let's go.
Yeah.
And it literally happened like that one afternoon on a Sunday afternoon, hanging out in the pool with the kids. And he was talking about business and growing a team. And I went, I'll do it.
So there was no journey to get to it. It was like, you know, you'd been around it already, you know, seen it. And you're like, hey, I think I could do this. Let's go.
Exactly. That was pretty much it. And he was looking to bring on a buyer's agent. I asked what that looked like. And he told me, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. And his honest response was, you know, you need to really think about this. And if you're going to do it, you need to throw your hat over the wall because there's no going back.
Yeah.
And the following day, I walked into my boss's office, handed him my 2 weeks notice, and that was it. Done.
There
was no thinking about it. I was like,
all
just
in.
Do it.
Yeah. Yep.
So I went on vacation, came back, got licensed, and I've been here ever since.
I'm more surprised, like, knowing you. I feel like we've gotten to know each other pretty well over the past few years. Like, thinking about you and IT just doesn't, like, I know you're a technical person and, like, you know, you're pretty detail oriented and stuff like that, but, like, I just can't imagine you sitting behind a desk all day long.
No. Yeah. It was tough, especially, you know, 10 years in the military, I was an aircraft engineer. So I was out and about all the time on the flight line working, you know, back at the squadron and yeah, just being behind a desk just doesn't suit me very well. I love to be out in the elements, meeting people, having a great laugh. So just being sat behind a desk by myself for 8-9 hours a day was pretty, and just taking phone calls and DMs all day wasn't really fun for me. So
yeah,
it was a great transition.
Yeah. Very cool. So I know you recently branched out on your own. You're starting your own team. So that's very exciting. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. A lot of anxiety, a lot of nerves around it, you know, but if it doesn't scare you, then you shouldn't be doing it. It scared me and I did it anyway.
Yeah. So that's exciting. What, I guess, you know, where are you kind of at in the process? What does that look like so far for you?
So currently in the process, you know, I only started the team at the first of this month. So I already have my admin set up because I know that's a critical part of the business. And again, I don't like to be sat behind a desk all day. So I got my admin squared away. I've got my transaction coordinator, my personal assistant squared away, who does a lot of my social media for me, which is awesome. And now I'm at the point of interviewing agents to join the team and expand. And hopefully by the end of this year, I'm going to have 5 agents on board and just keep going from strength to strength.
That's awesome. And I feel like for anyone that's listening, that's the appropriate way to start a team is with the admin side of things. Most people, me included, are like, no, I'm smarter than everyone else. I'll start with an agent. And they're like, oh shit, I have no processes. I have no operations manual. I actually don't know how to do anything outside of it being in my head because it's not down on paper. So you're definitely doing it the right way. And like, if correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you had some of these people before, right? Like I know your assistant's been with you for a while, right?
Yeah. My assistant's been with me for 6-7 months now, and she's phenomenal. She really is. And the one thing that I really wanted her to focus on was my social media, because obviously I understand that presence. And again, agents, if you're successful and you're busy and you're doing your actual job, which is selling real estate and helping clients, there isn't always time to do social media and sit down and put posts and stuff together. So she was just spot on with that. She was like, I'll jump in, I'll take care of that for you, which was great. And then on my previous team, we had a transaction coordinator. We had all that in place. So I just knew when I went out on my own, I needed to set up that right away. So I did.
For sure. That's great.
Yeah. So anybody thinking about doing a team, get your admin squared away first. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. No, I completely agree on that. That's super important. So one thing I know you've talked about a lot, mainly live, I don't know how many, podcasts you've done about it or whatever, but like the non-owner occupieds, right? Like being in Arizona, I know that there's a lot of like second homes and investment properties and stuff like that. So that's been something that's been a great, conversation driver and business driver for you. What I guess spurred that? Is it just because there are a lot of people that have second homes and investment properties in Arizona, or what was kind of the thought?
So it actually started last year. I was on a Tom Ferry coaching call with Jeff Mays, and we were struggling for listings. Nobody was wanting to list, and Jeff just basically said, the old methods aren't going to work anymore. You got to look outside the box. And he actually posed the question of, just out of curiosity, how many absentee owners, non-owner occupiers do you have in Arizona or in Tucson specifically? And we didn't quite honestly know the answer. So we dived into it. We know that we're a state where we have a lot of winter visitors. And so we started diving into those numbers, and we found there was a huge pocket of non-owner occupiers. And so from there, we just chose 2 or 3 farms, sent out some letters and hoped, seeing if something stuck, and it just took off. It was a phenomenal year last year with non-owner occupiers, and as because we've spoke at events and my numbers have been put out there. We took 17 listings last year just off of non-owner occupiers. And that actually cost $9,000 in letters and postage and all that sort of good stuff to take 17 listings, and made $170,000 in GCI.
That's what I was like, doing the quick math in my head. I was like, conservatively, maybe 10 grand a pop, that's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So what are you just doing letters? Are you doing calls? What type of like follow-up are you having with these?
So the initial letter goes out. And once that letter goes out, invites people to reach out and let us know if they're interested in yes or no, if they're interested in selling. We want people to say no. We really do. We don't just want them to be like throw that letter in the garbage and never look at it again. So we invite people to actually tell us no, basically. And we have a script set up for people who respond with a text of no, yes, indifferent. And we just leverage those. Like people that say no, typically it's because they don't have enough data. So if somebody says no, we typically follow up with, do you know the current price of your home? Do you know what the homes around you are selling for? Now you have this information, or can I get you that information? How does that change your mindset? And I've had no's turn into yeses because they just, they didn't have enough data to actually say yes. And once you provided that, then they're like, holy cow, I didn't realize my house was worth this much. And you're telling me I could get this in X amount of days? Sure thing. And it gets them off the fence. So we have scripts in place for texts. I always follow up with a follow-up call, a couple of days later. Did you get my letter? Did you get my response? And I just want to have real conversations with people. That's all it is. And I honestly don't mind if people, ask me for the value of their home and I give it to them and then they never decide to sell. It's all about providing data, providing value. I don't want anyone out there to not know what they have in their back pocket as equity in their home.
I think there's two key points there. One being like most people, when someone would say no or say that they're not interested, they'd be like, okay, thanks. Have a great day. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think like just asking one more question, you know, just pushing one more time is helpful, you know, in the, hey, totally get that you don't want to sell, but would you be interested in this? You know, I've already got it. This isn't a crazy thing for me to give to you. Right. I think
it's, again, you know, it's the crazy thing. Most people know the value of their car before they know the value of their home.
Well, it's easier to find that, right? You just, you know,
exactly.
Google it and
just Kelly Blue Book it, yeah. Google it. You know, every, you know, if someone was to ask you right now, if you were to sell your car, how much could you sell it for? They'd be like, oh, I can sell it for X. But yeah. If somebody asked you what your home's worth, they're like, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, why is that? You know, it's the biggest asset you own. You should always know what your values are. So I'm more than happy to present people with that data and let them make a decision from there.
Do you think that you had a higher than usual conversion ratio because when you actually called them to talk to them, they heard your accent and then just wanted to listen to you talk? Do you think that was...
I have longer phone calls, that's for sure.
They're like, oh, who is this British man that just wants to to chat with me about my home?
A lot of people think I'm from a call center. I'm like, sir or madam, call centers can't afford English speaking, English call center agents.
Yeah. The conversion ratio to pounds is just, screws
you
over.
Know what? It does allow me to have more detailed conversations. I would say 9 out of 10 times people do ask me where I'm from. And when I tell them I'm from England, everybody's probably visited England once and they always come back with, oh, we went to England a couple of years ago. Well, great. Where did you go to? And it just gives us a little extra more depth of connection. But as long as you can circle that background to the reason for your phone call, you know, you have more meaningful conversations. So yes, Katie Day, people do just speak to me to listen to my accent.
20 minutes later, you're like, oh, wait, I called about 123 Banana Street. Do you want to value? I've had that. No, but I mean, I do think that creating rapport is super important, you know, whether it's an open house lead, whether it's a non-owner occupied online lead, you know, a lead that you've had for a while, right? So it's like, if that's something that breaks down walls and creates that rapport, you know, we always tell people like, figure out something that you can talk about other than real estate, you know, before you kind of dig into the real estate stuff. So, you know, the accent, I think, plays in your favor.
I'm actually from Alabama. I just put the accent on for real estate purposes.
And then is that you also added the little thing above the E in your last name as well?
Yeah, just as made me stand apart. Otherwise, everybody thinks I own like bar yoga studios or hot Pilates studios. I'm like, that's not me. If you knew me, you know that's not me.
I love it. You kind of got me. You got me off topic. It's funny. So I'm sure you get this, and this is not real estate related, but like, you know how like when you talk to someone and they're like, oh, I went to school here or I'm from here. They're always like, oh, do you know so-and-so? Do you get that a lot being British?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. I have people that say, well, you know, I've got a family member that lives in Manchester. His name is John Smith. Do you know? And I'm like, oh, John. And they're like, you know, I'm like, no, I haven't got a clue.
It's always funny though, like when that actually happens and you do know the other person, you're like, man, this is like once in a lifetime. But I had this past weekend, I was with Pip. Pip from Tom Ferry, right?
I was
with Pip. And then, you know, I'm talking to these people. I'm like, oh, hey, the guy over there. And I point at Pip and he like waves. I was like, he's British. And I was like, you guys should talk to each other. But it wasn't like, do you all know each other? You know,
we all kind of like just magnetically connect to each other. It's amazing. Yeah. And there's so many British agents in the Tom Ferry network, which are all awesome. We all tried to get together and have a pint and chat it up and
have a pint.
Talk about Her Majesty in the good old days.
You're funny. Okay. Let's. Ooh, what are you drinking out of a coffee pot there? That's a large mug.
Holds three cups.
For those of you that are listening to this and not watching, he's got this coffee mug that's got a very wide base, and it looks almost to be the size of like a Mr. Coffee coffee pot.
This sounds like there's some judgment there, Katie.
Well, no, it's huge. Is that a teapot or a coffee pot?
It's like a little mini coffee pot.
Okay.
I drink my Earl Grey first thing in the morning, then I switch to a cup of Joe to keep me through the rest of the day.
So you do both. You're equal opportunity caffeine drinker.
Gotta start my day in the British way, and then I move to the Yankee Doodle way and drink coffee for the rest of it.
Well, you gotta assimilate somehow. So I appreciate that. thank you for trying to fit in. Let's talk a little bit more about kind of like your daily routine, things like that. So other than getting up and drinking some Earl Grey and switching to coffee, what are some other things that are like daily non-negotiables for you?
Daily non-negotiables, Well, first off, and not necessarily in a daily routine order, spending time with my family is huge. You know, I've got two young daughters, beautiful wife, got a golden doodle, who is in completely, yeah, you've got, yeah, we know this. They're completely insane. So spending time with my family is really important. And I think for anybody listening who's in real estate, if you don't set time apart from work to spend time with your family, your loved ones, you're going to burn out real quick. Your family are your biggest cheerleaders, your biggest supporters, and it's really important to not forget them and neglect them. So I always spend time with my kids, whether that's doing the school run, whether that's spending 20 minutes in the morning watching crap YouTube videos with them because that's their jam, whatever it is, just spend some time with my family. Other big non-negotiables for me is gratitudes. I love doing my gratitudes in the morning. You know, that's just really sets my day up. Just being grateful for what I have and grateful for everything I've got is huge. And then I do a little thinkertation. This actually came from Tom Bilu several years ago at a Tom Ferry event. I got an opportunity to chat with him and ask him. And one of the things he does is thinkertation, which is almost like a meditation, I guess. But it's actually where you just sit in a silence and let your thoughts come to the forefront and then write them all down. So then that way you're not just, you know, drifting off during the day thinking I've got to do this, thinking I've got to do that. Just start that morning off with 10 minutes of thinkertation, write all your thoughts down, and then your mind's free for the rest of the day and you don't have to worry about other stuff and you can focus on, you know, prospecting in your business and running your business and being a great agent. So those are a couple of my real daily headers: family time, thinkertation, and gratitudes. They're huge for me.
Okay, so 10 minutes a day, you do this every day?
Mm-hmm. Every day.
And like, what are some things, like, obviously I don't want your entire list of thoughts or whatever. We don't need to go that deep. But like, is it like personal stuff, business stuff, just anything that comes to mind you write down?
Absolutely anything. Absolutely anything. It could be new thoughts you have about your business, personal items that you need to take care of, things that are on your agenda coming up later that day that need a little bit of extra thought about it. Whatever comes to the forefront, it doesn't have to be just business related. You know, you could have a list of honeydews that you need to take care of around the house. You know, just write it down and get it out of your mind. Otherwise, it just clouds you. So I have a little journal. I write all my thoughts down every day, get them out the way. And then I can, you know, if I do have free time in my day, I can go back to that book and be like, okay, now I need to take care of this, this, and this. So it's just a great way to clean your mind at the beginning of the day.
Yeah. And that's so do you feel like then throughout the rest of the day, you are more focused and productive because you don't have all of these fleeting thoughts of like, oh shit, I forgot to take out the trash. I forgot to
100%.
Buy dog food or
whatever. Yeah, 100%. Exactly that. And it does, it allows you to stay more focused for the times that you need to be focused. And you know, we all have a bit of downtime during the day. Like I know you work out religiously multiple times a day because you're an absolute mentalist. And I'm sure during those workout times, you know, when you're grunting and throwing the weights around, you're like, shit, I need to buy dog food, you know, you just get at it. So it does help. It does help completely clear my mind of some of the stuff that I don't need to be focusing on.
That is one good thing about a lot of these companies now is like, once you get on a regular cycle of buying things, you can sign up for like auto shipments, mm-hmm. you know, to come at a certain time. So we've got like our paper towels and toilet paper, like electrolytes, dog food, like all of that on regular shipments.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's a BritBear homeowner top tip is put your air filters on a regular subscription from Amazon. And then every 30 days when they turn up, just replace the filter. You'll never forget to replace your AC filters.
Okay. I like it.
That's a golden nugget right there for free. I wouldn't even charge for that one.
A golden nugget. All right. So if you're a real estate agent listening, that should be your next social media post.
There we go. And you tell all your clients about it. That one's for free. I didn't even charge you for that one.
I'll probably get the bill in the mail, guys. Don't believe him. Don't believe him when he says that. Or not to like try to one-up you or anything, but you could do a media filter and then you only have to do it like once a year.
Ooh.
Do you guys have those in Arizona, the media filters and the ACs?
I think we do. Yeah, I think we do. That's a great one too. There we go. I'm going to take that one away.
Mind melt over here. No, that thinkertation. That's what you said. Thinkertation.
Yeah, thinkertation. So it's like meditation where you try and block out all of your thoughts and just, you know, go deep and internal. And which this is exactly what Tom Bailey was saying, because somebody asked him the question, you know, when you're meditating, you know, thoughts come in, how do you push them back out again and stay in a meditative state? And he responded, he's like, well, I do 10 minutes of thinkertation first. And then once all my thoughts are out of the way, then I go into my meditation and I'm really clear of mind. And I was like, that's genius.
Doesn't he do like hours of meditation too sometimes.
Oh yeah. He like completely zones out. Yeah. Like I've got kids and a dog. Getting 10 minutes of meditation in without getting abused by the dog or the kids is tough, you know? But the thinkertation really does work. It really does work. And in fact, it's something that I ask my kids to try and do too every morning. Just take a few minutes before you go to school, sit down and think of your thoughts and get them off the, you know, otherwise, you know, you're going to have a rough day at school if you're thinking about other stuff that you shouldn't be thinking about. So
yeah,
it's good for anybody.
No, I like it. I definitely made a note of that. I'll try it. Cause that's, I do feel like you have those moments where you have those fleeting thoughts. And you're like, you know? And so what I normally do is I'll just fire off emails, you know, and it's like in the subject line, either to myself or to my, you know, marketing coordinator, to other team members or whatever. But I think, taking the time to actually write things down would be a lot more beneficial, especially if it's like, okay, just for the next 10 minutes, I'm going to go through all the things in my head.
Yeah. And I think as, you know, I think as realtors too, we're very reactive. So any thoughts that we get, it's a case of we need to take care of this right away, you know, because that's how we are with our clients. If a client calls and they have an issue, it's a case of we'll take care of this right away. And we can get into that very reactive state. So with the thinkertation, it allows us to be proactive and get those out of the way.
Yeah. Funny enough, so I don't know if you know Ken Posick out of Orlando.
I do.
Yeah. So he has in his calendar 90 minutes of chaos time.
I like that.
And his
that.
Chaos time is when he can be reactive to anything that's happening.
Now, is that 90 minutes a day or 90 minutes a week?
I would have to assume it's every day.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I like that.
But like he's a super time blocked, like, you know, he's pretty big on YouTube, right? So he's been doing like, you know, a content day every Thursday from 8 to noon, basically like it's in his schedule and calendar like forever, right? Mm-hmm. But like his chaos time, I'll ask him. I have a call with him. I'll ask him what his time frame is on that, if it's daily or weekly. But yeah, that's his time where he knows he can be reactive and you know, drop everything to do something or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And the time blocking thing's huge. I'm a big fan of time blocking. I've been a big fan of time blocking for a long time. That was something we had in the military as engineers. We had to block certain times to work on certain aircraft, certain things. So time blocking is huge. And if again, if there's agents out there listening who haven't time blocked and set their schedule, try it. It's such a gold mine. And again, it allows you to focus on whatever's in that block. So if that's responding to emails, if that's prospecting, if that's family time, it allows you to be completely in focus for that period of block time. So I love time blocking. I block time with my kids. I block time with my wife. It really is. It is. That's a solid strategy for scalability and allowing yourself to grow.
Only solid if you actually follow it. I have plenty of things. I'm like, oh yeah, this is in my calendar. Then I'm like,
What would Tom Ferry say? If it ain't any calendar, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, right? Then it's the follow up that I sometimes lack.
Well, here's the thing: don't ever delete a block; just move it.
Very true.
Leave blank spaces in your schedule for if something, you know, if you have a block of prospecting or a listing appointment that's blocked for an hour but ends up taking two, you can move the next block to another gap around your schedule. Yeah. Never delete a block; just move it.
Well, and I think that that's something that people get very worked up over, right? Is like you create this time blocked schedule, you have every minute of every day planned out, and then something goes wrong and everything's then screwed, right? Instead of, as you just said, instead of being like, oh my God, my day is now in shambles, like move it around and, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. The one thing you should never delete is like date night with your wife or your spouse. Like if that's the block that you're constantly deleting, you are in trouble.
that was one of the first things when we were in coaching that like our coach like told us to do, and we're like, yeah, you know, like, okay, whatever, you know. And so like we skipped it, and then like she was like, your homework for the next 2 weeks is to do date night. And she's like, if you don't do it, I'm gonna charge you for your call and not you know, do it. Like I'm gonna hang up on you and charge you for your call. And we're like, ah, shit, now we've gotta go do date night. But it is something that is in our calendar, and like it's something that like, you know, for a lot of things, you know, we'll just put it in the calendar, or we'll like, you know, go to dinner with a client on a Tuesday, or we'll, you know, go work out or whatever on a random evening. But date nights, like if you're moving it or switching it to Saturday or whatever, like you've got to ask the person for permission before you move it. Cause that is like a standing thing in our
calendar. That's the worst thing. Moving a date night appointment and it sends an email notification to your spouse on their calendar, and then they reject the move. You're like, Oh God. or they delete the block for you. You're like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Oh, no. Yeah, so I normally ask before I move it so that, you know, I'm not getting a passive aggressive decline of my invite for, you know, sushi, you know.
Who can ever decline sushi with Katie Day? Let's be
You know, when it's Saturday, not Friday, Ryan's like, declined. No, thank you. Pass, please. Cool, man. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your like mountain climbing. Like, I know that you and like Robert Mack and I talked about it on the podcast here, like pipes and like y'all, like I could never do that. So I don't know if you know Chris, he's climbing Everest right now.
Yeah. I saw that actually on social, which is insane. I think he's actually leaving base camp today.
Yeah.
Up to camp one or camp two, which is amazing.
Unreal. So when did you get into all that?
Last year, actually. It's all okay. Robert Mack's fault. I'm completely putting the blame 1,000% on Robert Mack. So Robert Mack and I, we grew our friendship through COVID in 2020, riding the Peloton with the TF group.
Yep.
We were riding every morning, 45 minutes every morning, and the friendship just grew and grew and grew. And, you know, he's an avid climber. He climbed Aconcagua with Bill Pipes, and he's done multiple mountains in California. And he just asked me, he's like, bro, do you like to climb mountains? And I'm in this mindset right now, and I have been for like the last couple of years, where I just say yes to anything and then figure it out. So I was like, yeah, man, sure, easy. And he was like, well, let's come to California and do a mountain. And I was like, crap. So I went to REI, bought all the gear, turned up at a mountain with Rob Mack, and we smashed it. It was, you know, it was 10,000 feet. And we smashed my, you know, just a great day hike. It really was a day hike. Now I was blowing out of my trumpet. It killed me almost, but I did it. And I just got hooked.
Yeah.
Just disconnecting for an entire day from my phone, from the internet, from social, from the world, hanging out with a great buddy, climbing a mountain, talking when you can, when you're not dying.
Yeah, when you can actually breathe.
Yeah. And it was a great experience. And then I came down and I said to Rob, I was like, when are we doing this again? And 2 months later, I flew back to California and we climbed another mountain together with an overnight stay at like 12,000 feet. And after that one, actually, Bill Pipes chimed in and spoke to Rob and was like, hey, I'm thinking about, he's like, hey, brother. I'm thinking about going to Russia. And he asked if I wanted to go to Russia this year to climb Mount Elbrus. And I just said, yes. I said, yeah, I'll do it. I'll figure it out. Well, you know, Russia decided to kick off and that kind of got canceled. But we're scheduled to go climb a volcano in Mexico later this year. And there's talks of myself and Rob and Pipes and a group of others doing Mount Aconcagua in Argentina next Christmas.
Oh, so, very cool.
Yeah, it just stemmed from a, screw it, I'll say yes and I'll figure it out to becoming a passion. Yeah,
that's awesome. What when you go to, if you do go down to Argentina, just bring me back some Malbec, some wine. That'd be great.
Absolutely. I promise not to drink it on the way home.
Yeah. buy the bottle you're gonna buy me, then buy an extra bottle, you know,
just buy an extra bottle just in case. I'll try and keep Pipes away from it.
Yeah, between him and you, I don't know, I'm like,
what's the worst that could happen? So that was really it. I'd done hill walking and mild mountain climbing back in the UK with my brothers and with the military and that sort of stuff. But
yeah,
I'd done a lot of hiking, but I'd never really done like we're going to start at this elevation and we're going to climb for 10 hours and get to the top of that mountain in one day.
Yeah.
And it was daunting.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. And I've learned a lot of mistakes doing it, but I've also found a lot of peace doing it too, and really solidified a great friendship with Rob, you know?
Yeah, no. And so I guess pre-COVID, I mean, I know during COVID you did a lot of Peloton. I would ride maybe one out of every 25 rides with y'all. I still have a Peloton in case you were wondering. I know I don't check in on the rides often, but I actually
just plugged mine back in 2 days ago and it was like, you have updates from 2 years. I'm like, shit.
Crap.
Yeah.
I feel like there was a good little crew, but I guess, you know, pre-Peloton and pre, you know, hike mountain climbing, because it's not really a hike, but like both, they go together, right? What did you do to work out prior to that?
So I used to play rugby. I played rugby since I was 18 years old.
Stereotypical.
And it really was. I played football or soccer, as y'all call it, for many years before that. And then I played rugby at 18 and I played up until 2017, 2018. I had a pretty serious injury in 2017. I snapped my leg in the middle of a game.
Oh,
surgery, plates, pins, wires, all that sort of stuff. So that changed everything.
Yeah.
I used to love going to the gym, lifting weights. But then COVID hit. I got fat. I got lazy. I got on the Peloton. And I, you know, I've got to get back into getting into the gym. And I've got multiple people telling me that daily, Rob and Pipes and, you know, health advisors and health coaches, like, you got to work out. I'm like, sure thing. So I actually just bought a Tonal. It gets delivered in a couple of weeks and I can work out from home and get back into the routine. But yeah, rugby was my thing for decades. There's nothing better than training twice a week, putting your, you know, really exhausting your body, and then playing 80-minute rugby match on a Saturday, hitting dudes that are twice your size and taking them down. There's nothing more satisfying. There really isn't.
And I
still have all my own teeth.
You know, we just have different like outlooks on the world, I guess.
Why, you can't imagine hitting somebody for fun?
You know, I mean, I guess it depends on who we're talking about here, you know.
We mentioned no names. we mentioned no names. But it wasn't just the sport either. It was the camaraderie.
Yeah.
You know, being in the military, there's a huge camaraderie, which is amazing. It's a brotherhood. And then you double that with being in the military and then playing rugby in the military, you get a double brotherhood. And quite honestly, when I transitioned out of the military and came to the US, there was no transition for me. I literally quit the military on a Monday, flew to the US to live for the rest of my life on a Wednesday. But the one consistency for me in my transition was rugby. One of the first things I did when I moved to Arizona was find a rugby team and get back into that camaraderie again, because I'd lost everything.
Yeah.
And so rugby has been a real key part of my life. I don't actively play anymore, apart from a couple of old boy tournaments. And that's not really rugby. It's just a drinking session with some sort of physical activity involved with it.
Yeah. Get the band back together.
Yeah, but now I coach. I coach the local rugby team that I was a part of. So it's nice to kind of give back and still be involved in that community, because it's phenomenal. And I think it's one of the greatest sports on the planet that everybody should at least try or get involved in.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool. Well, you've got a lot of cool stuff on the horizon, both with work and personal stuff. So I'm excited and obviously can't wait to, you know, follow the journey on Instagram and our random text messages and stuff like that.
Follow me up a mountain.
I mean, I'm not going to do it physically. So doing it through the phone is, you know, just as far as I'm going to go.
Next mountain I go up, if there's signal, I'll FaceTime you just so you can be there.
That's why you're my boy, man.
You got to the top of a mountain with us. It's totally fine. So let me ask you a question, because I don't suppose a lot of people ask you a question.
On the hot seat. You know who does? You know who does this is basically all the coaches. Like, so when we did like a podcast with like Jeff, 5 minutes in, and we're like, wait, stop asking questions. This is my podcast. Like, you need to, and like Tom Ferry did the same thing. I was like, no. You're not turning this background on me. So it's fine. Hit me with it. Let's go.
Well, you know, you are very well established. You absolutely rock Texas. You know, Move Me to Texas, I think, is just a phenomenal brand, and it's who you are. You know, again, some people don't even know who you are as a name, you know, Katie Day. They just know Move Me to Texas, which is great branding. I love your social. I love your social media. So tell me, because I need to up my social media game with video especially, and you've just done an entire blueprint on this, for people who didn't go to your blueprint and for people like me who weren't able to go, like, what's the secret sauce for you with your videos? How long do you take to plan out what you're going to film? How often do you film? Give me some insight so I can be better.
Yeah, for sure. So I think as far as planning out what I'm going to film, generally what I do is I've got a note on my phone that for short form stuff, anytime I see a piece of content or I hear something or I have a conversation with a client and it's like, I've talked about this before, or this is really good market information, or this is really good if someone wants to buy or sell, I write it down. Right. So like, you know, you have a consultation with a client and they go over a bunch of things and they have questions and you're like, man, I answer this question all the time. Then put it into a video. Right. You know, and I know you do this already, like more on the fly. Right. But like you come out of an appointment, you're like, I just got out of an appointment and blah, 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 blah. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's great. And I think that a lot of times actually like that kind of more on the fly content is more engaging, you know, and you just go in live or opening up the camera real quick and recording something. But like, you know, I just write all of them down if it's not something that's like pressing, needs to go out right now today. And then I shoot with a videographer every 3 to 5 weeks, depending on my travel schedule, his travel schedule, and just like life. And if I'm doing short form, I normally aim to shoot between 30 and 50 videos. Wow. So we shoot for like 3 to 4 hours. And basically he sets up the camera, you know, and I have like, you know, I only own like 4 t-shirts. So I have those 4 t-shirts and we just shoot a crap ton of content. Then I have it, right? So like I've had times where I've been sick, I've been out of town, I've been this, I've been that, but I've got 50 videos, you know, in a Google Drive, I can just download and post it, even if I'm, you know, across the country or sick or anything like that. So,
and those short form, those are the notes that you've taken, you know, during those meetings, during those experiences where you're like, I should make a video on this.
Yeah.
You're writing all those down and then you're knocking all those out in one day every 4 to 5 weeks.
Yeah. No, or if I see something that's like, you know, like someone else's content or something like that, I'm like, I like that idea, but this is how I would do it. So yeah, no, that's normally how I do it. All right. Last question for you. It's the one that stumps everyone.
Okay.
If it was your last meal on earth, what would you be eating?
Oh shit. Roast dinner, British roast dinner, roast beef, okay. Roast potatoes, roasted vegetables.
Everything's roasted.
Yorkshire pudding, gravy. It's gotta be a substantial British roast dinner. There's nothing better.
I like it.
If I was on death row and they asked me what my last meal would be, it'll be a roast dinner. Either that or an all-you-can-eat buffet, because then you technically don't have to get killed because you're still eating.
Well, until you can't anymore. Anyways, man, I so appreciate you and all, you know, that you do for, you know, the Tom Ferry ecosystem, for the real estate community in general. And just, I appreciate our friendship. Really excited again to watch like the stuff you're doing in your personal life, watch, you know, everything you're doing on the work side. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Katie. Love you.
Love you too.